And welcome back, guys, for another episode of Punchlines and Politics. Once again, I'm Josh Shavers. And we are very excited to be back. We're definitely trying to keep up this new schedule. And so we have a lot of good things lined up for today, a lot of interesting conversations. Unfortunately, our special guest had to cancel, but we're still going to talk about the topic. And you know, before we get into that, I'm going to let Braden introduce what we're talking about today.
All right. Well, so as if you listen to the podcast that we released last week, I was basically told that everything that we were going to do today was a secret, that the special guest was going to be a secret, and that the topic was going to be a secret. Well, the secret was sprung. And so now I know. And so that's why I have enough knowledge to tell you all about what we're going to be talking about today, is because someone spilled the beans. Literally the only person responsible for keeping those beans unspilled. Anyways, folks, our topics today are going to be the topics of prison reform and the Fifth Amendment. For those of you that are not familiar with the Fifth Amendment, we are going to be covering what it says, what it means to us, and whether or not we think it's a controversial thing. Because as we stated last week and in weeks prior, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, literally ties into everything in our Constitution. And so there's going to be controversy about everything that revolves around that.
Yeah, he's right. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, I think, coming from our backgrounds, even. You being a history major and, you know, looking into teaching and stuff like that, you know a lot of the past and like that. But me being a social work, I'm very involved with, you know, people being incarcerated today. So I think we're going to bring a very different and unique conversation to the table today.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to get in touch with us and maybe even converse about these topics, about any topics that we go over, feel free to follow our Twitter account. That's @andpunchlines. And we love to talk to you. We love to hear from you. Give us a follow. Send us a DM. We'd love to talk to you about anything and everything that we possibly could. Just don't be afraid to give us a follow.
All right, so let's just jump right into it. We'll start out with topic one, prison reform. And, you know, would you like to start? You want me to start, buddy?
I'll go ahead and start. That's fine.
Go for it.
So, prison reform. In the past 4 years, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, but we've had a lot of talk about prison reform. It seems to be a newer nuance in the political arena that we're on the verge of changing a lot of things about incarceration, how prisoners are treated, the environment of prisons, and how we can alter that, how we can change these systems, basically, to better fit a current justice system, a justice system that you would associate with a society of modern norms and modern values. And so you've seen in the past 4 years with President Donald Trump that there have been various people talking to him about prison reform. One notably would be Lil Wayne, someone who's been in and out of the prison system.
Yeah, you made some good points, Braden. I mean, the prison system has changed a lot in the last 100 years, and what we consider a felony is changing. Our definition of a felony is changing. And a lot of our culture is changing with the legalization of marijuana in some states and everything like that. But I was wondering if you had heard about how, starting here in Illinois, they passed a law where inmates can now receive mental health help. Because before then, they were not given access to that. And one of my professors is actually retiring in order to go down and supervise at the Illinois State Penitentiary for that. So I was wondering what you were thinking about, like, mental health help for patients. A lot of colleges are doing classes now in prisons, and just what you see the direction that we're going in.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely an interesting an interesting look. You know, it's I think it's important to get mental health professionals in there, a psychiatrist, for instance. I think that's important. I think that's a part of the rehabilitation process. I think if you're able to, as a prison system, if you're able to do something like that, I think you'll find that it's effective more often than not to really get down to the root of certain crimes and even criminals. You need to focus on the mental health aspect because it is a huge part of why people do what they do. I mean, it's huge.
It really is. And I think with the mental health help that, you know, the rehabilitation like you were talking about could come a lot easier, don't you think?
No, absolutely. I would totally agree with that.
Yeah. And, you know, I believe that, like, as a human, like, everyone, like, can go through depression, can go through anxiety, can go through a lot of mental health things, especially in a stressful situation like a prison. But how do you feel about people who are in jail for extremely violent crimes getting something like mental health help or mental reprieve or, you know, medications and stuff like that? Because I have talked to some people in my classes. Now, I don't agree with this. I don't think that we should just allow suffering to be a punishment. But the opinion was raised that people who are committed, have committed like these incredibly violent acts, should not get help.
That's interesting. I don't think I agree with that either. I don't really see how attempting to give some mental health help to these violent criminals would do anything wrong. I don't see how that would be unmerited. Because whether or not they're getting out of prison, could you not at least offer them a chance at a better life in prison? I mean, I don't think somebody who committed mass murder somewhere should always get euthanized, really. I mean, if you think about it, first of all, it takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of time to even put something through like a death penalty. And that's a good thing. We don't want to be going around killing all willy-nilly in the prison system.
That can be something we talk about later in this episode, about the death penalty.
I do think that there's some merit to giving health, a mental health advisement to these criminals, because whether or not you're getting out of prison anytime soon, let's say that you're given a life sentence, I don't see why you should have to sit in a prison and just live like you're dying. I mean, to me, I think that's unhealthy.
I would definitely agree with that. You know, people shouldn't have to sit there and suffer through things. You know, if someone is going through severe anxiety, you know, as a human, we shouldn't just watch that happen. You know, that I think that it's a good step in the right direction, you know, because a lot of these people, whether they're there for violent, nonviolent, for 3 months or 20 years, it's a hard thing to go through. You know, it's life or death could happen every day. You never know. And that can break someone's mind very easily. And the stress of just, you know, what am I going to do when I get out? And that leads me to my next point, is that I personally think that prisons should hire a facilitator that can help take care of people going into society again. So, like, instead of having parole officers, which should be a thing, I mean, you should be legally, you know, checked out and, like, you know, held accountable while you're still rehabilitating. But do you think that there should be someone whose sole job is advocating for that person, trying to find them a job or a place to live? Because it's hard to do on your own, especially as a convict.
I'd agree. I mean, I don't necessarily think I would require that. I think that that should be something that you have to qualify for. I think you could definitely qualify for that in prison. Maybe you can apply for that. But I don't think every single person should be given that opportunity, especially if they're not going to utilize it. I mean, sometimes...
Yeah, I would agree with that. It would be something you would ask for over a standard thing.
Sometimes you see ex-felons coming out of the prison system and being complacent with doing nothing. I mean, they haven't been doing anything for quite a long time in the prison system. I mean... Obviously, you do some things, but you can choose to do hardly anything in prison if you so choose. And so it's kind of hard to get back into real life and reality if you aren't trying to better yourself in prison. So I really do think you should be able to qualify for something like that and apply in prison. I don't think it should be hard, but I think if you want to take the time and effort to really better yourself and be better outside of prison, well, you should have every opportunity and right to do that.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you. I mean, no prison would have the manpower to do it for every inmate, but it would definitely be something that, you know, the people who maybe made like a mistake or, you know, were in the wrong place at the wrong time and really didn't do anything wrong and who are actively working to get their lives back on track could, you know, utilize the services. Because the avenue I was thinking would be that it would be social workers whose one of their main jobs is like helping people who are less fortunate find like services or, you know, help them find jobs or homes or something. And so I don't know. I was just thinking about how cool it would be to have, you know, something working for them when the rest of the system is working against them. Mm-hmm. Now, the next point I wanted to bring up is when you are a felon, you do lose certain rights. You lose some of your amendment rights. Like if you are convicted of a crime that is violent, you no longer have your Second Amendment right to own a gun. You lose your right to vote after you are a felon. You can lose your right to, you know, but I'm not going to list them all because that would take a long time. But, you know, the main thing is you do lose a lot of rights when you, you know, commit a felony. And it's really the main thing I want to ask you is once you are out of prison and rehabilitated, should you regain your right to vote?
If you are rehabilitated, I mean, who's to say? Who's to say if you're rehabilitated, if that's not the purpose of prisons? I mean, it's tough. I would say no until prison reform, like real prison reform that allocates resources for prisoners to be rehabilitated and then given the opportunity back, through a hired professional who could advocate for them in their rehabilitation in prison. I mean, I think that's a good, I think that's a good and solid way to go about things, especially as it pertains to voting. But until then, I don't see how you can really effectively quantify rehabilitation in prisons, because we don't have that. We don't have these opportunities and these resources to know for sure.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And there is no real way. I mean, people can lie and everything like that. But one point that I had watched in a documentary from my class recently was that once people have served the time that they were given, they have effectively paid their penance and like had their punishment. Now this would change depending on the crime. Like some crimes aren't as easily forgiven. Like jaywalking can be forgiven in a second, whereas murder one could never be forgiven.
Well, you're not gonna go to prison for jaywalking.
Technicality. I'm speaking more generally, but with a nonviolent offender, I wouldn't be comfortable saying violent because that would just bring up a whole different conversation. But for a nonviolent offender, if you commit your crime, do your time, pay your fines, and then move on, I see no problem with allowing you have your right to vote back, because you have paid your penance and you have done what needed to be due. But with violent crime, that's a whole different conversation. But what would you feel about violent offenders just regaining their right to vote after they pay their time?
You mean non-violent offenders?
Did yes, I say violent? Okay, yeah,
yes, non-violent. Give the murderers their right to vote.
No, but like non-violent offenders. We're all going to vote
for Jared Leto for president. All right. To that, I'd say I'd like to say this. I disagree with that notion, and for only one reason, and here's why. There is a difference between paying your penance and paying your dues to society and rehabilitation and actually being an effective and good citizen of the United States. There's a difference. You can go in the prison system for a nonviolent offense, and I would say you can still be a bad citizen. I don't think every nonviolent offender is a nonviolent person or a person that is that we don't think should vote because you did something like that. I mean, that's just the reality of it. I think there's a difference between going through your entire sentence and actually coming out the other side a better person. For some people, being convicted for nonviolent crimes can actually harden and make you bitter towards the system and towards America in some ways. Obviously, this isn't every criminal. This is a total generalization. However, I want to make it clear that until we as a country can confidently say that we have reformed the prison system to the point where you have the opportunity to really be rehabilitated rather than just doing your time, then I will say, yes, I think you should be able to have the right to vote back. But until then, it's tough to make a generalization when you have people who are dangerous and shouldn't be voting, someone who shouldn't be able to have that right.
And I think that was kind of why I tried to separate violent and nonviolent. But I think another thing that I would want to bring to the table about this is that there are circumstances where people who commit crimes don't go to jail, and people who don't commit crimes go to jail. And, you know, it's a hard road to walk when we say, you know, some people who could be considered dangerous or like prison people shouldn't. Because, I mean, even in our political realm, you would be hard pressed to find someone who hasn't done one thing that's against the law. And so who are we to say that these people, and again, I'm speaking more nonviolent than violent, shouldn't be able to come back into society? They're playing a role in society, just like everyone else. Some people play less of a role in society and still have the right to vote. And I believe that, you know, everyone who's a citizen of the United States, underlying circumstances there, should have their right to vote. And, you know, I think that if we start drawing the line of, oh, you have done this thing wrong, all we're saying is that you got caught and you're not allowed to vote anymore. Because there are people who have done much worse things who never got caught and are still voting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just find it hard. It's hard for me to say that they shouldn't. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, but the point that you made that there are people on the streets who have not gotten caught in things that are much worse and are able to vote, I mean, that's something that we can't control. I mean,
I'm not saying this.
Until the point of their incarceration. Yeah, I mean, it's out of the control. I mean, you haven't been caught doing anything, so why should you give up any rights? Does that mean they should have the right? Well, you haven't gotten caught. So I guess.
No. So before we use all our time on this one section, let's move into capital punishment, and then we'll go to memes, and then we will hit the Fifth Amendment quickly at the end.
So capital punishment. This is something that is extremely controversial in not only the United States, but in many modern societies. You look at capital punishment, and to some people, this is an absolute no-no. This is, oh no, we can't be choosing whether or not someone gets to live or die. And then you have some people who say, there are some people who have done certain things and have committed certain crimes that, yeah, they should be eligible to be put down for their crimes because they are so heinous and so cruel that you just can't bargain them being able to live a life when they have caused so much misery and agony to others' lives. And so this is something that I kind of teeter back and forth with as far as my opinion goes, because I think the more perspectives that I get on this topic, the more I question myself, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. I think everyone should question constantly their own ideals and morals and even opinions, because if you don't, then we become complacent and we become extremely opinionated, and that is.
I'm gonna put that on a t-shirt.
There you go. Put it on a t-shirt. Everyone, be less opinionated. Eh? Start questioning yourself. Nah, that wouldn't sound good on a t-shirt. Maybe a bumper sticker. Anyways, so
why don't you start us off with your opinion
capital
on that?
Capital punishment. My opinion is, I think there are some things that you can do that you should be killed for. I mean, I definitely think that it should be something that is decided upon committee. But yeah, I think there are some things. I can think of some things. For instance, mass shootings, especially in the case of school shootings. I think depending on your age, you should be eligible and frankly should be euthanized for that, because that is something that is extremely heinous. It's terrorism at its very root. And you are committing this crime, obviously with heinous intent, and it's something that needs to be addressed with a true and final deterrent, which is you're gonna die. If we catch you, you're gonna die. Okay, and I think that this is something that should be extremely, extremely in special cases. I cannot emphasize this enough. This has to be something that is under extremely special conditions.
Extremely heinous.
Exactly.
Violent.
And I don't have all the answers, everybody. I might try to act like it. You actually out there listening might think I got all the answers. I do not.
She doesn't.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks. An ounce of humility shot down. But no, I don't have all the answers. And so can I tell you what those special conditions should meet? Not really. I mean, I can give you some generalizations on what I think, like, you know, mass shootings and things like that. But for the most part, you kind of get my gist. My gist is you do something that is societally just detrimental to people's lives and to society as a whole. Yeah, I think you should kind of get – you should get euthanized for that. I mean, we euthanize dogs for a whole lot less, and those poor things hardly do anything. That's a bad example, but you know what I'm saying. However, I do want to state that it's tough. It's tough to figure out what is deserving of the death penalty and what isn't. And that is something that you're honestly going to have to figure out for yourselves. It's something I'm still figuring out because, like I said, I don't have all the answers and I'm still looking at other perspectives. But I definitely think capital punishment is, in special cases, an effective form of deterrence. But I'd like, before we kind of get into your opinion, Josh, I'd like to ask you, would you get rid of capital punishment altogether in the United States?
I think I would. I think I would. And it's not because I don't believe that some people are deserving of it, because with people like Ted Bundy and Dahmer and all these people are just sick and twisted people. As you know, Brayden, I was a criminal justice major when I first started here at college. And I came to the conclusion with myself that I couldn't be responsible for pointing a gun at someone, taking someone's life, or, you know, generally being involved in the taking of someone's life. So I decided to switch. And through that, I've realized a lot about myself is that whereas people might deserve it in some circumstances, like you listed off, I couldn't justify being involved in some kind of practice like that. Now, that is definitely an opinion and would not hold up in like any form of law ever. But my personal opinion would be, yes, I would get rid of it. But because my personal opinion would not do well in running a country, and, you know, it's more of a practical response is this next part. I do agree with you in that there are circumstances where people are too dangerous or too vile to be kept alive. I think Ted Bundy is a great example of that. I mean, confirmed killed like 30 people and unconfirmed possibly another like 40 or 50. That is 90 people's lives who he took or hypothetically took. And you're talking in the upper thousands of people's lives he affected from that. Now, does he have the right to continue living on and being a reminder to those people? And then you could argue that is death or life in prison a worse punishment? And so it would depend on the person's opinion. I mean, you can't really just pick one and say it's worse. But it is a hard road to walk to know which is which and which Absolutely. Is better. But opinion-wise, I don't agree with the death penalty.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective.
And that definitely came from a lot of personal place and less of a political stance. But I do realize that there is a necessity for deterrence like that, especially in a sophisticated society with a lot more concealed dangerous weapons. Mm. All right, out of the depressing stuff, you ready to move on to something happier,
yeah,
buddy?
You know what? There's not really an effective segue for something that heavy, so we're just gonna kind of say it is time, my friends. It is time for meme times. Get ready for the punchlines part of punchlines in politics. We've talked enough about politics. Now it's time for the funny.
As tradition, you need to introduce your meme first.
Oh boy, my meme. All right. Let me pull it up right here. All right. I got a great meme right here for all of you. It's a very, very good meme. So it is a picture of I'm assuming some kind of like video game or anime art or something like that, that shows a giant celestial being with a spear made out of fire, kind of looking over this tiny puny person. A knight, perhaps, with his own sword, and he's just relishing in the sheer awesomeness of this foe before him, and the big celestial being is given a subtext, and a subtext is people who know what IDK means, and the knight below is labeled God. So it's in, I guess it's insinuating that people who know what IDK, the people who know what IDK memes are somehow, you know, substantially greater than God. I'm assuming that that's what it means. So, you know, it's, yeah,
that is an obscure meme.
But you know what? It's the obscure ones that just it's the obscure ones that are the best. You know,
I would agree with that.
Other way.
So my meme is called tentatively the new scientific method. Now, this is the funniest thing. I've been laughing at this for probably close to a year now. Now, this meme is called the scientific method, like I said, and it's just one sentence. Now, the first word is a very bad cuss word, so I won't say it. I will censor that to frick. So the new scientific method is frick around and find out. Now, this could apply to any scenario of all time, but someone posted a picture of a fork and an outlet and said, oh yeah, you think you're right? Well, why don't you try the new scientific method? And, you know, in the comments, everyone wrote the same thing, frick around and find out. Now, when you just apply this to just obscure scenarios, like, I don't know, catcalling someone, or, you know, you're going to frick around and you're going to find out.
Find out.
Because, yeah, that's how life works now.
Oh, man. Goodness gracious. All
right. So we have one more segment on the show.
That's right.
And on that, we are going to talk about the Fifth Amendment.
You guys might have noticed that we're doing this a bit backwards today. Well, backwards is kind of a weird word. We're kind of doing a politics punchlines politics sandwich, because Lord knows why. Because you know what? It's time for some change. And we have chosen that today what we're going to do to change the world is simply change the structure of our podcast. It's one action at a time, ladies and gents.
Next week, we're going to have two meme sections.
Ooh, and maybe one politics section. That'll really duke you guys out, huh? Anyways.
This is such an awkward episode.
We're all really hoping that you're laughing along with us, too. Otherwise, this is really awkward.
Oh, gosh. We just this is for you guys too. I'm not even gonna edit this part out, but this has just been such a weirdly placed episode that we keep not knowing how to move on from the points. I mean, because it's a deep topic and we're also kind of making jokes out of it.
You'd think that on a somber topic that we are on, that we'd have some kind of I don't know, some kind of structure, some kind of composition emotionally. But guess what? we don't care.
This is off the cuff.
This is just off the chain, folks.
We are experiencing the new scientific method.
Here at Punchlines in Politics Incorporated, we try to change things up. We're like Google.
We're going to sell merch now that says frick around and find out.
Long sleeve or short sleeve, guys?
Oh, yeah. Let us know on Twitter, because I might actually make a shirt for myself. I really like it. But I'll make one for you too, buddy. Well, it'll be our official podcast shirt.
Can you put AP Punchlines in Politics? and then name off all of the imaginary students that were in that class on the back.
It's just going to be obscure versions of our names.
Just different spellings of American presidents. Just totally wrong.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, that's just
wonderful. Anyway, we gotta get into the Fifth Amendment.
We do, because we don't try to stall here.
So I will start us out this time. This is going to be a quick section. There's not a lot we want to talk about with this, but I did think that, you know, with talking prison reform, death penalty, the Fifth Amendment is good.
Actually, before you start, I'd like to quick. Just define the Fifth Amendment, because a lot of people don't know. And if you're listening to this and you don't know what the Fifth Amendment, please, for the love of God, download a pocket constitution onto your iPhone. Like, it's free. It's free. It's there. There are no ads. Just quickly go look at the Bill of Rights, please. Like, it's really easy. For those of you who don't know what the Bill of Rights is, I can't help you. You're too far gone. But I'm just going to quick define the Fifth Amendment for all y'all. I'm just going to read part of it. This is from the Constitution, Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia. All right? What this basically says is, you don't have to say diddly squat.
You don't have to snitch on yourself, basically.
No one is telling you that you have to say this stuff. I mean, obviously, unless you're in some sort of, in front of a grand jury and you're under oath and you gotta say things. That's one thing. But even in that case, you can plead the Fifth, because you don't have to talk. You don't have to incriminate yourself. Is basically what this is saying.
So my one question I wanted to ask you about this was, it's just a simple question that I've been thinking a lot about recently. Does pleading the Fifth actually help the person who does it? Or does it make them just seem guilty? Now, this is more in the eyes of a grand jury and not a judge. So you have to think about the average person instead of a judge who would know the law backwards and forwards.
I would say it does. It shouldn't, but it does. If you're looking in the eyes of the law, I mean, it's not supposed to add or subtract to your case at all by pleading the Fifth. However, when you plead the Fifth in front of a grand jury, guess what that grand jury is going to think? Wow, this guy just pled the Fifth, so he doesn't have to incriminate himself because he absolutely did it.
Exactly. Right.
So I guess I would say it does. It shouldn't. I mean, I don't think grand juries – the essence of grand juries is that it's regular people, right? They've been given the rules that a grand jury is supposed to follow, but ultimately these are just random people that have been.
It's people with their own stories and emotions and interpretations. Exactly.
So one person could interpret your pleading the Fifth as, this guy's smart, because maybe that guy understands law. Maybe that guy understands that, of course, he doesn't want to say things that could possibly incriminate him or say something that would make it sound like he did something wherein he actually didn't. But then other people would say, this guy's just a sleazebag. He's not saying anything because he doesn't want to snitch on himself because he absolutely did it. How about you?
I completely agree with you. I think that in its essence, the Fifth Amendment was a good thing. Like, they were trying to protect people from being, like, normal people being out-talked by lawyers who are literally hired to talk well. And that's really important. But I would change the Fifth Amendment in that if a question is being asked that is like a directly incriminating question, that the judge would call a violation of the Fifth Amendment instead of the person who is under trial. Does that make sense?
No, I think it absolutely does. I think what we can take away from this, this is kind of shooting out a shout to all of our listeners. What we can take away from this little PSA that I'm about to send out, don't commit crimes. Because if you don't, then you'll never have to plead the Fifth. Look at that. Don't commit crimes.
Crime rate drops to 0%.
Oh, Biden told us to stop committing crimes, so we're just going to go ahead and stop that.
What a chat.
You know what? Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, anyways, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very fun episode. It's been
a very hectic episode.
It's been a roller coaster, all right? It has been. And
I have so much editing to do in this one.
Well, there you go. But yeah, once again, please follow us on Twitter at @andpunchlines is our Twitter handle. Please give us a follow, have a conversation with us if you'd like. And I don't know if anyone has seen, but I have asked an extremely important question on Twitter, and that is, how on earth do you get almond milk from almonds? Do they have microscopic udders that were just being lied to from doctors and scientists? Like,
and before Braden goes too far down the rabbit hole, I'm just going to move right past that and say that next week we will be talking about another really good topic, something that a good friend of ours is very passionate about. So we're going to have him on the show. And we're also going to try and bring on another guest. So you might be seeing the first ever double guest Punchlines in Politics episode.
How exciting is that? What?
Double guest.
Man, talk about
it. So stay tuned next week.
Exciting. No, sorry, talk about exciting. All right. If you haven't listened to us before, exciting. You should listen to us now, because that is probably the most exciting and groundbreaking thing ever in podcasts. I mean, really.
So our special guests next week are Sean Burke. You can find him on TikTok, Instagram, anything under the name Dr. Burkey. And our guest, the second guest, will be returning, and that's Ethan Langen. And we will be discussing the Environmental Protection Agency.
Woo-wee.
So that'll be a really good episode, and hope to see you all there again.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that you will continue to listen. We enjoy seeing all those views on our podcast episodes. Please keep it up. Follow us on Twitter. We love to see you. We love to chat with you.
All right. See you guys
Absolutely.
Next week.
See you guys.